It is such a wonderful and beautiful morning. I am so happy to be able to stand here and look out and see so many smiling faces, so many wonderful the children. It always does my heart right to see so many children. I hope that you agree with that. It's an amazing thing to see all the kids here. I want to just say thank you for being here. I want to say thank you to Leslie. Leslie Berry made this arrangement in front right here this morning, and we brought it up. She brought it for today, and didn't she do an amazing job? Let her know. It's beautiful. We're thankful that she took the time out to do that, but also for the kids, something a little special, and parents, it's kind of glass, so maybe you might want to come up. She's put some candy in there, some suckers or something like that down inside it. So if you want to come up and get one of those afterwards, don't fight. But we'll dole them out slowly. But what a wonderful blessing that she has been to all of us this morning. So thank you for that. You know, I love today because the entire world, for the most part, is celebrating today in a special way. Now, I know that there's the first day of the week is the first day of the week. And we know that as Christians, we worship God. We worship our Savior on the first day of the week. But today, and when many people don't do this normally, many people don't think about on the first day of the week who they're worshiping. Today is special. Today is a day that the world, at least, has called a kind of a timeout and said, we're going to remember who Jesus Christ is, what He's done. And I'm thankful that you are here to worship God this morning. It is a blessing. It truly is. To be able to be with so many believers singing praises to God and realize that God is in our presence. He is here with us today. He has blessed us in everything that we are about and all that we're doing because we're doing it as just exactly as He said He desires it. God wants our worship. God wants our praise and He deserves it. We're here this morning to do that. But what I want to do, what I share with you this morning, the title of the lesson is simply, the empty tomb, the empty grave. You know, we look back over 2,000 years and there was something so simple as a grave, a tomb, that was empty. And a lot of people in the world look at that and kind of dismiss it. Many, many people, millions and millions of people actually have dismissed it. But as Christians, our faith goes back to that one time, that one small hole and that was empty, and we look at that and go, well, there all of our beliefs center around that little place. Why is it so important? How do we know, if someone asks you, how do you know that that tomb was empty? How do you know that? Can you know that? I believe so. So this morning, I just want to share... I almost said real quickly, but I don't know how quickly it'll be. I'll try to be quick. We're going to look at, how do we know? Well, the first thing that I want to share with you is this. That we know the grave was empty because God told us it was going to be empty way before that day ever come. And if you were to think back in Genesis chapter 3, when He's in the garden with Adam and Eve, and He's looking at them, He's talking to them, why did you do the things that you did? Why did you sin? Why did you choose to separate yourself from Me? Why did you do those things? And God is carrying on that conversation, and then He goes to Satan, and He curses him, and He says, I'm going to put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. And He will crush your head. What's He talking about? You think it when you bruise His heel, you've won. But the reality is, He will crush you. He will destroy you. And when He comes out of that grave is what He's talking about. The world will know He is victorious and you failed. They will know who you are and that you were a failure. Psalm 16:10, the one that we quote often, but He says, you will not allow your Holy One to see decay. So He's talking, He says very clearly, you will not abandon Me, you will not abandon the Lord to the grave. He will not be left there. That tomb will be empty. So God is foretelling about it. The Lord Himself even foretold that it was going to happen. In John chapter 2, verses 18 and 19... Jesus goes into the temple and He runs all the money changers out.
And he says, you guys have got to get out of here. You quit making my father's house a den of robbers. Now get out of here. And then the Jews say to him, what sign do you show us as your authority for doing these things? And you start looking through the gospel accounts, and over and over and over, people are always asking him for a sign. Give us a sign. Show us your authority. Why are you doing these things? And Jesus answered them, and he said, destroy the temple. Go out and wipe out the temple. Destroy the temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Now, he wasn't talking about the physical temple, which is what they couldn't grasp. It took us how many decades to build this, and you're going to do it in 3 days? No, it's not going to happen. In Matthew chapter 12, 38 through 40, the Pharisees once again are asking Jesus, said, we want to see a sign. And he says, Lord said, an evil and adulterous generation craves for a sign. The only sign I'm going to give you is the sign of Jonah. For just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the sea monster, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. 3 days and three nights. That'll be the totality. It won't happen any longer than that. The Lord will not be there any longer than those days. Mark chapter 8, 31 says, and he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days be raised again. Over and over, Jesus is talking about, this is going to have to happen. I'm going to have to die. I'm going to have to go through something because that's the plan. You don't understand the plan of redemption, but God understands it. My Father understands it. I understand it. Not that I want to do it, but I understand what's going to have to happen. This is what's going to happen. I'm going to be crucified. I will be killed. I will be buried. But in 3 days, I'll be back alive again. Even the Jews understood it. When you think about it, towards the end of his life, and they've got Jesus on trial in Mark chapter 14, as they say, we even heard him say that I will destroy the temple made with hands, and in 3 days I will build another one made without hands. So when they've got him on trial and they've got all these witnesses and they're saying, we heard him say these things. So even those people who hated him, despised him, knew what he said he was going to do. They sought guards. They sought protection to keep him in there. It wouldn't happen. We know the grave is empty because God said it was going to be empty. The Lord himself said it was going to be empty. We know that the grave is empty because it was witnessed. In Matthew chapter 27, and 62 through following, Joseph of Arimathea goes to Pilate and says, I want the body of Jesus. I want to take him. I want to take his body and I want to bury him. But Pilate said, no, wait a minute, let me check. So he goes to the executioners, brings him in and says, is he really dead? And they say, assure him, he is dead. Okay, because he's dead, then I'm going to give his body to Joseph. Joseph is going to go take him and bury him. He's going to put him in his own tomb. And Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, as it says, watched it and knew that it happened. They watched the stone be rolled in front of the tomb. Now, I don't know how much history that you've looked at and studied, but when we're talking about a tomb for a rich person like this, they would cut it out of the rock, and it's inset, and you can actually get inside this. Now, it's not a giant 8-foot-tall opening. You're going to have to duck to get in. But you know what a rock, if any of you have ever lifted a rock before, rocks are not light. And so the stones that they would use to put in front of one of these tombs often would weigh a couple of thousand pounds. But Mark says this stone was exceedingly great. So it was larger than a normal one. So I don't know what it weighed, 3,000, 4,000 pounds. Who moves a stone that weighs even 2,000 pounds? I just picked up some concrete that they had to cut out of our drive the other day. About that long and about that wide. Any of y'all picked up 4-inch, 5-inch thick concrete that big? I thought, I'm a teenager again. I can do this. After I lifted it, I went back to the truck kind of like this. And so they're looking at this stone, and the ladies watch them roll that stone in, and can you imagine what's going through their mind? Because they're already making plans to do what? To go back
and to go in and anoint the Lord's body in the tomb. And they even have conversation on the way to the tomb, and they say,
how are we going to do it? How are we going to move that stone?
We watch them put it in place. And you know, there's no way that we're like those men. How many of them did it take to put that stone there? And then they roll it down into like a little declivity so it doesn't roll away or move. So it makes it even harder. How do we get that?
But the ladies are watching and they have witnessed that the body has been put in the tomb. Then, in Matthew 28, Mary Magdalene and other Mary, they go back. And on that conversation as they're going and they get to the tomb, and what do they see? The stone's moved. Now, I don't know what you're thinking, but in their minds, I don't even know why they're walking out there, what they're trying to do. Maybe they're going to ask the guard to move the stone for them. Maybe they're going to do those things. They don't really know. They're just going to go. Their heart is broken. They don't understand why they've had to give up their teacher, their Lord, the one that they've been following, the one that they love. And they get there. The stone is out of the way. And then the voice, the angelic being talking to them, says, why are you here?
Why are you coming to this? Don't you remember? He's not going to be here. Don't you remember him telling you that this grave was going to be empty on the third day? Don't you remember everything that he said to you?
He is risen just as he said. That's the message that they get. Now they still don't comprehend everything. But his body is not there.
He is risen, they've been told. So what does that mean? It says they're filled with fear, but with great joy.
Verses 1 through 6 of Matthew 28. They're filled with great joy. We don't understand it yet. We don't understand everything, but we know that the grave is empty, that the Lord is not there. So they immediately run and they go to tell the disciples. And then right after that, Peter and the one and the disciple that Lord loved, John, they run and they have a race. Peter gets there second. John gets there and he runs up to the door and he goes immediately.
He stands and looks. He waits on Peter. Because Peter's always the one who jumps in first, right? Well, Peter check it out first. I don't know what's going on, but Peter can do that. And of course, Peter gets there and he jumps right in. And then John looks in. And sure enough, there are all the wrappings that they had already put around the Lord's body. And they're laying there. Where's the Lord?
Where is he? Why is the tomb empty? Why
is this grave where we've laid his body? Why is he not here? And all of those teachings are going through their mind. All of that stuff, they're trying to make sense of it, and they don't have a clue, and they're working, and they're confused, and they're struggling, and they're, I don't know what to do.
What's going on? But it says in verse 8 of chapter 20 of John, the disciple entered, and he saw, and he believed. Tomb's empty. In Luke chapter 24, the Lord appears to all the disciples. And at first, they're a little bit afraid. They look and it says that they think it's a spirit. And he says, it's not a spirit. He says, come here, come here.
Let me show you. Look at my hands. Look at my feet. Come and touch me. Spirits don't have flesh and blood like I do. It's me, just like I told you I was going to come out of that tomb. You don't have to worry. All the things that I told you would come true have come true. Everything that God promised you He would do, He's faithful and He's going to do it. I told you I would come back. I wouldn't be left because my Father won't leave me there.
Do you believe? That's what He's asking them. Do you really believe? If you don't, come here. Come here and touch me. I want you to know with absolute certainty that I am out of the tomb. The Jews, in Matthew 28, they gave... Why would the Jews give money to the soldiers? Why wouldn't they have just said, this doesn't mean anything? They didn't want him. They hated Christ. They hated him. They didn't want him out of that tomb. That's why they went to Pilate and said, "You know what he said? This man said he's going to come out after 3 days. We need to put a guard there. They need to seal the tomb." They did all of those things. Why would you tell them, "We're going to give you a bunch of money if you'll just lie and say his disciples came"? Really? Do you know what happened to a soldier who can't present what he's protecting to those who told him to protect? Their life is gone immediately. They're killed. They're put to death. Now, I don't know when God decided to move that stone. Maybe you've thought about this. A lot of times in my life, I just think, you know, I just picture the stone being gone and the Lord kind of a vapor, a mist. He just was out of there. I don't think it happened like that. I think the Lord came back and that guard was standing there, all 16 of those men, which is probably how many guards there were, and God moved that stone, and I don't know if Michael the archangel or who was there with the heavenly host surrounding them, and they see a picture that God is allowing these soldiers to see and say, "Don't you understand who this is in this grave? I don't care how powerful you think you are. I don't care who you serve. No one can hold this door closed. That's my son, and he's coming out. You can't stop me." The Lord's saying, "Who's going to stop my Father? If you love him, who can stop you?" That tomb cannot hold the Son of God. And it didn't. Witnesses, one after another, watched. But then, the last thing I want to share with you this morning, that tomb, that empty tomb. How do we know it was really empty? Look at history. Look at what happened immediately after that tomb was opened. How many people were willing to give their life because of it? And you look at the life of Saul, and you know that in Acts chapter 8, we're really introduced to him, and it says all those people who had just murdered, who had just put to death Stephen, laid their coats at the feet of a young man named Saul. And he was giving his hearty approval to it. Here was a man who had honor, prestige, he had money, he had everything going for him. He was a Pharisee, he had the best education a man could possibly have at the time. He had given himself to Judaism. There was no one going to change his mind. He was going about, it says, after that point, and just decimating the Lord's church. He was killing people, putting them in prison, tearing families apart, doing everything he could to destroy this idea that that grave was empty. And God stopped him. Said, "What are you doing?" And then Paul will say, "I did exactly what I thought I was supposed to do. I'd given my life to making everyone understand what I believed was right. But the Lord stopped me. And he talked to me. And he said, 'Quit doing what you're doing. Because the grave's empty. You need to change your life.'" You go back right now if you want, Paul. I'm going to change your name, Paul. Go back to the grave and look inside and see if I'm laying there. See if my body's there. I'm telling you it's not there. I'm the Lord. I'm the one that you need to be following. Are you willing to listen to me? Are you willing to follow me? And Saul changed his life. Everything that he was about, his life was changed. The man who was persecuting is now the persecuted. One who's willing to go through everything, to lose everything that he had. Someone that people didn't even want to talk to or eat with. They don't want anything to do with him. But he said, "I can't do anything else. I can't change this message. God's given it to me. Because the grave is empty." Jerusalem was changed. Judea, Samaria began changing. Paul went across the world. The Roman Empire was changed. The entire world was changed in one generation. People
changed the world. A small handful of men went out telling a message of what God had done and showing them what God had done. People all over the world had already heard about this Jesus, all the things that had been going on, the things that He had done. When He walked up to someone and touched them and they weren't able to walk their entire life from the time they were born, and now they're able to run around and jump. People who couldn't speak could now speak. People who were blind could now see. Alright, I can see He does all of these things. But the real message is, it's not about the physical things. It's about a relationship lost with the God who created the entire world, and He wants that relationship with His people. He wants us all redeemed. So it didn't matter. Every language in the world began following Him. Every socioeconomic background was represented. Every IQ variant chose to follow Him and pick up their cross every day. Why? Because the grave was empty. History was changed forever. Why? Because simply there was a grave that was empty? No, but because of the one who left it, who arose from the dead and showed Himself to the world, and God said, "This is My Son." No other name given under heaven by which we can be saved than the one who came out of that grave. I want to ask you something this morning. When you start thinking about, and as the world starts thinking about, a grave, an empty grave, didn't really happen. What would it take for me this morning to sit down with you and study with you, talk to you and convince you that World War II never happened? That nobody by the name of Hitler ever lived or anyone like him. What would it take for me to convince you that that did not ever happen? Or maybe Vietnam. Or Desert Storm. Or any other war, any other thing in history. What would it take for me to convince you that that didn't happen? Could I do that? Why? Some of you were there. Some of you saw it firsthand. Some of you were in the middle of it, and you go, "I'm telling you right now, I lived through that, and there is no way you can possibly convince me." And so we look back in history, and we think of things like the Roman Empire. It existed, right? Did you see it? Why do you believe it? Did you ever meet Alexander the Great? No? Why do you believe he existed? Why do you believe in those things of history? You know, we only have a tiny little bit of evidence, of documentation that those things even existed. Some of those people, we don't have any kind of documents for hundreds of years after, and we base our history on a little shred of evidence and say this happened. And we believe it, and we take it, and say, that's it, it's fact. There is nothing in history proven more accurate than the empty grave. We have witnesses over and over, historical documents written even by people who didn't even follow after Christ, who are writing things about Him. And about how a world was turned upside down. And not one place do we find where there's history saying this doesn't happen. None of this. We have witnesses and none of that ever happened. We disagree. Now later on they did. But if I were to write a book that said Vietnam never happened, how many people would I sell it to? Not very many. Because they'd think you're a kook. You don't have a clue what you're talking about. I'm going to tell you this morning, the grave was empty. We have more evidence for that than anything else in history. The world changed overnight. Tens of thousands of people gave their life because that grave was empty. Millions of people throughout the generations have been saved, have renewed a relationship with God because God emptied the grave. So we stop and we think about Easter, we think about the first day of the week. The reason why we're here is because that tomb, that grave, not only was empty, but the one who's in it. He is seated right now, this morning, at the right hand of God, ruling over His creation, waiting to welcome you home. That's the news of Sabbath. That's the blessing of the first day of the week. That's the blessing that we have in this life. That's the message we have to share with the world. Now, candy nice. But it's not about candy. It's not about pretty dresses and all those things. And those are okay. Those are wonderful. And it's not about us sitting around and visiting and eating a big meal. It's not about those things. It's about an empty tomb and a Savior who's risen and saying, I want to bless you. I want to make you perfect. I want to bring you home for all of you. I've already paid the price. Are you willing to give everything that you want to that one simple thing? The greatest. And it is. Make no mistake, He did that for you. Even if you're the only person alive, He still would have done it for you. How do you respond? That's your choice. I can't do it for you. I can't. I can beg and plead. I can do any way that I can. And I could even ask Ed to get up here beside me. We can do it together. We've preached together before. We could do it in tandem. I could ask 8 or 10 more to get up here. And we could do all that, but it still boils down to one thing. Do you believe that the grave is in? And if you do, you'll respond. Just like God is. I've given your life. I don't know where you are this morning. I don't know what the struggles are in your life, but if you're willing to give your life to Him, He's ready to bless you. He's alive. And He wants to bless you for you. Are you willing to accept that blessing in your life? You can do this right now. You can choose to follow Him and accept that fact, that amazing fact that that tomb is empty in your life. Choice is yours. You need to respond to Him. You can do it right now while we stand.
Jesus is definitely God.